The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning. 4 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 2nd of May, 2023. How are you doing? I do hope you're very well indeed. And I do know that you're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show for another week, albeit somewhat shorter than last. It is Tuesday. It's Tuesday. Okay, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you know what to do. WhatsApp and text us on 086-6025000, 086-6025000. Donna Marie and Niamh working on the show today. If you prefer to give us a call and speak to us, then 074-91-25000 is how you get in touch. 074-91-25000. And if email's your thing, comments at highlandradio.com. And feel free to join us as we stream live, as we do every single day here, across our social media channels and on YouTube. You'll find us on our website, YouTube Highland Radio Ireland, across the Facebook pages, and on Twitter as well, at Highland Radio. All right, let's run through what's making the papers this morning. We'll start with the Donegal Democrat. Inspection at the Ballyshannon Community Nursing Unit found that it was compliant or substantially compliant in all areas of care and governance. The Health Information and Quality Authority carried out the unannounced inspection at the facility on January 10th. The report was published on April 27th. The HSE-run designated centre for older people is located at Carrickboy, Ballyshannon. There were 26 residents present on the date of the inspection. The Derry Journal tells us that Fisheries Minister Charlie McConnellogue has designated three Inishowen ports as the new landing points for vessels from the north. The minister was speaking as he opened the Sea Fisheries Protection Authority's port office in Greencastle last Friday. Minister McConnellogue announced Malinhead, Glengad and Bunagee as three new Irish ports for vessels from the six counties. They will be serviced by the SFPA in Greencastle. Greencastle is now one of 12 new ports designated by Minister McConnellogue as EU entry ports for vessels registered in the north. Masters and operators are required to adhere to the regulations pertaining to entry to and landing only in designated EU ports, and to ensure that the masters of the vessels provide sufficient prior notification for such entry and landing. Such reporting requirements exist for non-EU vessels entering EU ports. This now includes vessels from the north. Right, on to the Irish Independent now, and I wonder, will any of you be able to avail of this? The government hopes to add the equivalent of 28,000 homes across the country by allowing council tenants to rent out rooms in their houses for up to $14,000 per year tax-free. Under the current rent-a-room scheme, property owners can rent out rooms in their houses and apartments for €14,000 tax-free per year. Senior ministers agreed at Cabinet to extend the scheme to all household types, including local authority homes. For the first time, council tenants will also be able to rent out their spare bedrooms as increasing numbers of landlords sell up and the rental market shrinks. There are currently around 140,000 council-owned homes across the country, of which 14,000 and 28,000 are under-occupied. That means there's spare rooms in them. This means that there's a number of empty bedrooms in them, for example, in homes where pensioners live alone or where there were families but the children have grown up and moved out. Local authorities cannot compel council tenants to move out or downsize. Is this something that you could see yourself availing of now if you live in a council-owned property and you have a spare room or spare rooms? You're able to rent them out and earn €14,000 per year tax-free, which is not insignificant, and maybe some people might enjoy the company. Is it for you? 086 60 25000. Also in the Times, in the online edition, but I thought it quite interesting. Australia, where many of our young people now live, Australia banned recreational vaping and tightened other aspects of e-cigarettes laws on Tuesday in the biggest crackdown on the tobacco industry in more than a decade to try to stop an alarming rise in teenaged vaping. The government aims to ban all disposable vapes, which often come in fruity flavours, ban the import of non-prescription vapes, and limit nicotine levels, aiming for the sale of vapes to be confined to helping smokers quit. Just like they did with smoking, Big Tobacco has taken another addictive product, wrapped it in a shiny packaging, and added flavours to create a new generation of nicotine addicts. That's according to Australian Health Minister Mark Butler. He said it in a speech at the National Press Club. Under the new rules, vapes will be sold only in pharmacies and require pharmaceutical-type packaging. Vaping, widely seen as a safer alternative to smoking cigarettes and useful for helping smokers quit, involves heating a liquid that contains nicotine in what is called an e-cigarette and turning it into a vapor that uses inhale. So would you like to see vaping banned in this country? Except, of course, as a smoking cessation aid. That being said, it's not, ironically, I suppose, it's not actually seen officially as a smoking cessation aid in this country. But Australia, they're cracking down on it. And I'm not surprised, really. I think it's to probably protect the teenagers. They all seem to vape now, and they're very readily available. Right, so on the front of the physical paper, the number of people coming to Ireland and claiming asylum has dropped in recent months. I mentioned this actually last week on the programme. According to statistics from the state's International Protection Office, after a big surge in applications last year, leading to unprecedented pressure on services, recent months have seen the numbers fall back. In January, more than 1,300 people arrived in Ireland seeking international protection, a level on a par with most of last year. However, in February and March, the number fell back to 831 and 858, a drop of about a third. Some government sources believe the decline in numbers is related to a number of factors, including an increased Garda presence to check passengers disembarking from some aircraft at the airport, deploying Gardaí to some foreign airports, the continued pressure on services for asylum seekers here, and the tone of some of the government's communications on the issue. And I thought that quite interesting because you might remember we were over in Brussels, was it last month or the month before, and there was Gardaí checking people's passports as they got off that plane from Belgium, from Brussels, presumably with a view to turning people back if they didn't have the right documentation before they made land. The Irish Daily Mail this morning: there are growing fears about the number of people addicted to painkillers containing codeine, as new figures show their use has jumped by over a fifth. Is this something that concerns you or in your family? Want you involved in the conversations? All of them, of course. 086 60 25000. Amid a review of which could see the drug made available on prescription only, Fine Gael TD Colin Burke said the figures show a 22% rise in prescriptions for the pain reliever codeine issued through the three main public drug schemes. It represents more than 1.1 million codeine prescriptions that were issued last year. Now, there is codeine in some over-the-counter medicines, and I would expect, as soon as this story gathers more momentum, people hoarding them. I think that is something that we're going to see happening. Now, of course, pharmacies can be and normally are. We had this controversy before, do you remember? They will sort of have a conversation with you about purchasing certain types of drugs with codeine in them. But still, I think some people will want to have them in reserve. And then we're talking also here about people that are prescribed them. In 2022, the Dáil heard a young mother of two became addicted to over-the-counter painkillers containing codeine and died of an overdose. Mr. Burke, the party's health spokesperson, said worryingly numbers for the overall population could be higher than that, as these figures do not include items where the prescription has been paid for in a private facility. And as I say, this is something we spoke not so long ago on the programme, a couple of months in fact, about concerns from GPs, who I believe are the driving force behind this. What do you think of the notion of 16-year-olds being able to drive? Is that the age in America? Or is it from state to state? I don't know. Well, you could see 60, if you could ever get insurance, or even actually if you could ever get a driving test. It's absolutely crazy at the moment that someone, having spent a fortune and time, having completed their mandatory lessons, now would have to wait to even get the opportunity to be invited for a driving test, would have to wait to the start of September. So if you passed your, if you concluded your 12 driving lessons today, it's the start of September, the end of August, the start of September, before you'd be invited to apply for your driving test. Isn't that crazy? So frustrating for young people, and not just young people, by the way, of course, but people who maybe don't have or have a job or need to get to work or need to get to college, don't have access to the public transport that suits their times, having to wait to the start of September from the start of May to be invited to apply for a test. And then it's a further 3 or 4 week wait. That's terrible, isn't it? But anyway, 16-year-olds could enjoy that wait soon. An international transport safety body has expressed alarm at EU plans to allow children as young as 16 to drive cars fitted with a speed limiting device. Now, there is a tone to this article because, of course, 17-year-old children can also drive. But obviously, whoever wrote this is looking for the shock factor. The European Transport Safety Council, whose members include the Road Safety Authority in Ireland, has called on the European Commission to drop the proposal that would allow children aged 16 drive vehicles limited to the maximum speed of 45 kilometres per hour. That would be the biggest problem, choking up the road. The controversial measure has been proposed as part of a major revision of EU rules on driving licences in order to address mobility issues in remote areas. So what do you think? 16, too young? 086 60 25,000. School park, car parks would be wedged, wouldn't they? I wonder how many of you were affected by the French strikes, which affected many flights, not just into France, by the way, and a lot of flights out of Irish airports fly over France. And because of the way it all operates, if they down tools, the flights are downed. This is the Irish Daily Mirror. Dozens of cancelled flights over the bank holiday caused air travel disruption across Europe for thousands of Irish passengers. Airlines, including Aer Lingus and Ryanair, were affected, with Dublin airport arrivals and departures axed due to a new strike by French air traffic controllers. Their industrial action was due to end at 6 a.m. today, sparking concerns among passengers of a knock-on effect. Up to 15 flights to and from France were affected yesterday at Dublin Airport, including 9 departures and 6 arrivals, and with other affected flights at airports in Belfast, Cork and Shannon. Flights not landing in France but flying through its airspace as overflights were also affected, which Ryanair chief Michael O'Leary branded unfair. They want a European-wide system so that national issues don't cause problems. Not going to lie, struggled to find stories in the papers today. Not an awful lot happening, it seems. Certainly not worthy of paper. Lots of nonsense. Lots of four-day-old news, three-day-old news in the papers today, stuff that happened last week. So struggled a little bit. But I can tell you, lastly, and you will know this, I presume, if you're a worker out there, perhaps, the Irish Sun. Irish workers took a 3.9% pay cut last year on wages as they lagged behind inflation, new research from Oxfam has revealed. So effectively, your wages went down 3.9% because the cost of everything went up and most people's wages perhaps didn't go up in line with it. To mark International Workers' Day, the charity said that the cut equates to a loss of 2,107 in real wages, the equivalent of 8.3 days labour for free. So that's what inflation means. You worked 8.3 days last year for nothing. According to Oxfam, and it was worse if you were a woman, according to Oxfam, the total loss for staff in Ireland was over 5 billion, which also is a huge loss in tax take for the government, which is not going to be able to rely on multinationals forever. All right, Theo, that was a run through the newspapers. If there's anything you want to talk about, any issues you want to raise, any information you want to pass on, and it doesn't have to be bad, it can be good too, maybe an act of kindness or something like that, anything at all. It's your platform. Use it wisely. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text. 086 60 25,000. Or give us a call on 074 91 25,000.
The newspapers are courtesy of Kelly Centra Mountaintop Letterkenny, the 2022 C-Store National Off-License of the Year.
Why did I choose Ulster? I wanted a university who could give me the biggest possible future, but also the best possible time now. Somewhere I could make friends and have good crack, but also to set me up for the best job possible. I'm planning to take up one of the study abroad options, and then my big plan is to specialise in media law in LA. But for now, NI has one of the lowest student living costs in the UK. So, night markets, here I come.
Learn why over 30,000 students choose Ulster at ulster.ac.uk/go-north. Apply now for this September.
Highland Radio time checks with Expressway. Travel Route 32 from Letterkenny to Dublin when you book online and travel for less. Expressway, bringing you the time at...
Okay, the time is 18 minutes past nine. Our first guest going to join us very, very shortly. But first I want to read a letter that came into me here, a beautifully handwritten letter. We do appreciate those as well. And it reads as follows. Dear Greg, the following happened some time ago, but I want to let you know what happened. I also promised my older friends I would, so others would be made aware. I was doing my shopping at around 5 p.m. My car was parked in a disabled parking place for which I had a legal badge to use. I was about to unload my shopping when a man appeared by my side. I thought he was offering to help me, and I was about to decline when I realised he was saying I damaged his car. I could see that there was a huge dent in his rear bumper. I was certain that I hadn't damaged his car. He said that man over there pointing said I was the woman who did this to his car. I didn't even feel shocked as I was so certain I didn't do it. He said it would cost him a lot of money to get it fixed. I felt sorry for him but said that it wasn't me. He said he would have to phone the police. He referred to the Gardaí as the police. I agreed and said I would phone them. I then asked him where was the man as I would like to talk to him. It was then he told me not to worry and it didn't matter. He started to back away, which seemed strange. I was telling my daughter what happened and she immediately said it might have been a scam. I felt so sick to think anyone would stoop so low to target older people. I'm quite sure he was waiting for me or whoever had parked there. I actually felt sorry for him, and in hindsight, I do feel stupid. My faith in humans took a dive, but hopefully we'll recover, as most people are good. I was able to remain calm, but several older people would have given him the money. Maybe this letter will remind people to be aware. So what it appears to be, and if it is a two-man operation, it appears to be that one person accuses another of accusing another person of crashing into the car. They have a witness who perhaps is a friend of theirs, and the point being that maybe the person will hand over money to avoid any aggro. So if it is a scam, it's a nasty one. Is it something that you've come across? 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. We appreciate that letter and more than happy to read it out if it does avoid anyone else being caught out with something like that. Right, okay. Now, Niall McKenna is treasurer with the Tyrone GEA Centre. He joins us on the programme now. Thanks for taking the call this morning, Niall.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, okay. Now, there's a public invite to a pre-inquiry public meeting which is taking place this day week at the Silver Birch Hotel, Oma, at 7:30 p.m. What's the purpose of the public meeting, Niall?
That's correct, Greg. The meeting will take place this midweek in the Silver Birch Hotel in Oma. And I suppose the purpose of the night is that there is a public inquiry resuming in the Stroud Arts Centre in Oma into the A5 road on Monday the 15th of May. So we have, I suppose we're just responding to a lot of people's requests. So people have been contacting us and want to get involved in our campaign for the progression of the road. And they've been asking us how can they help. So I suppose the point of next Tuesday night will be to bring everybody to the meeting and to explain them how we hope that they can help in the inquiry process.
And it's vitally important, isn't it, that this road is upgraded. And we heard about that, of course, with the major launch of a new campaign not so long ago. But unfortunately, very tragic reminders as to how dangerous this road actually is.
Absolutely, Greg. You know, last Thursday just, you know, again showed to us that, you know, this issue is not going away. Firstly, I suppose our sympathies are very much with McKean and McSorley families and the entire communities of Strabane and Newton Stewart at this time. You know, and I suppose our group started at the end of last year with the sad passing of John Rafferty, who was a young up-and-coming GA star in Tyrone, a member of my own club. You know, and it affected us, my community, very badly. But, you know, we did make the point that this, you know, these accidents keep happening. It seems to be getting worse. You know, there seems to be an average now of four a year, roughly. And ironically, you know, and ironically, previous inquiries into this road have said that they've sectionalised the road, you know, and some people have said that the section between Ochnacloy and Ballygally is the least deserving, I suppose, would be one way of putting it, or least needed, and was deemed over provision. You know, and sadly, last Thursday proves that no section of the road is safe. You know, and the dual carriageway that was promised in July 2007 needs to be delivered as soon as possible.
For those who may not be fully aware, what is the hold-up, Niall? Why is what's seen as such a vital piece of infrastructure, A, firstly, in terms of safety, but B, in terms of access. For those maybe new to this story or might want to get involved now at this point because they've been moved to get involved, what's the hold-up?
It goes back a long time, Greg. As I said, I mentioned July 2007, and the reason I've mentioned that date is In the Assembly in the North in July 2007, that project was promised, a new dual carriageway, A5, straight through from Auchnacloy to Derry. And since then, there has been 47 deaths on the road. Now, there was deaths on the road before that, but that's the only reason I use that date, is because that's when the project was promised. Now, what happened then subsequently was a very small group, I would call it a micro group, have campaigned against the road going ahead, and have used various means, judicial reviews, inquiries, other sort of legal methods, and have frustrated the process at every stage, and have ultimately been very successful in doing that. And that is the pure reason for it. There's large public support for the project. Every political party in the North wants it, which is fairly uncommon. The Irish government have pledged money to it, and as I say, the vast majority of people are for the project going ahead, and as I say, a very, very small but determined group have frustrated it.
Like, I think we all understand there has to be a planning system, there has to be the right to appeal, there has to be whatever is required, but there also does come a point where you feel the public good not has to be put ahead of the system, don't get me wrong, but the public good has to win out. And we seem far beyond that now at this point.
You're totally right. You know, as I say, any normal society has an application process and an appeals process, and that's normal and that's totally correct. And people have the right to object to things, and that's totally perfectly fine in any normal society. But in these, and we were saying that in the North, a lot of mode, these bigger schemes that are for the greater good, there seems to be far too much opportunity for people to frustrate them. You know, and to be able to frustrate this scheme for 16, 17 years now just is ridiculous. You know, no appeals process should last that long. And you know, as I say, the outworkings of that are 47 deaths, we would argue. And we just think that's totally unacceptable.
Now, what can come from the likes of this public meeting next Tuesday in the Silver Birch Hotel, Omer, at 7:30 p.m. There is a process that is being gone through, whether people like how it's going or not. Like, what can the public, if they all unite together on this, and why wouldn't they? How can the public help to progress this? I wonder what avenues are open. Has that been explored, or maybe that's the purpose of this meeting?
Well, that's what we'd hope to explain to people next Tuesday night, and we think things have changed. And what I mean by that is, we started our campaign at the end of last year, but really with a public launch in January, and we had a massive turnout at our public launch. And our campaign slogan is very simple: enough is enough. And that's it. All we're saying is, you know, we don't talk about any other benefits of the road in terms of economic or regional imbalance or anything they got there. We just said we want to stop the deaths, and our message is so simple. And you know, we think we awakened the public on that at the start of the year. And what I mean by that is, you know, people by and large elect politicians and have local government and expect these people to deliver for us. You know, and we're largely passive. And a lot of things like that there. And we would have found that in public inquiries in the past on this issue, you know, we have been passive. And I mean, the majority of people, we have been passive on it and have expected it just to go ahead. And it obviously hasn't. So we've now reached the stage where the politicians, the local government, that want to deliver these projects, they need our help. So we're saying to the people, you need to mobilise, you need to show strength at next Tuesday night and at the public inquiry. And we wanted to make it abundantly clear to everybody at the public inquiry that the vast majority of people want budget delivered.
Yeah, and you need people to attend from far and wide, because there isn't a community or an individual either directly or very closely directly or very closely has not been affected by a tragedy, either death or serious injury on this road.
You're quite correct. You know, and I made a lot of these points at our public launch in Givahi, and I say, the genesis of our organisation was certainly the death of a young up-and-coming GAA star in Tyrone, and who was the latest of quite a number of GAA communities affected in Tyrone by the road and by death on the road. But I made the point at the launch that, you know, ultimately it's a much, much wider issue than the GAA, that the road does not discriminate. You know, it will kill you regardless of what sport you follow or none. You know, and it's not just a Tyrone issue. That's the other thing that, you know, that has, you know, been highlighted to us quite a lot. We've had, you know, and so it's the main arterial route from anybody travelling from Dublin to, the, you know, anywhere in the northwest. So if you're going to Derry or to Donegal, you're on that road. So, you know, it's affecting people in from the south of Tyrone, the whole way up to the north of Tyrone, to Derry, and to all the Donegal people. But, you know, basically, you could argue that anybody in Ulster travels on that road, you know, fairly regularly for business or for work or for holiday or for whatever. So, you know, it carries a massive amount of traffic, and it's just not fit for purpose.
Okay. Right. Niall, thanks for helping us share that information. I'll remind people when and where. But for now, thank you very much indeed. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Craig.
All right, take care. That's Niall McKenna there, who's the treasurer of the Tyrone GEA Centre. And you're invited, wherever you're listening to us from, you're invited to a public meeting next Tuesday night in the Silver Birch Hotel Oma. Everyone is encouraged to go along. And the simple message is, enough lives lost on the A5. We need the A5 delivered. So if you have an interest, I'm sure that's going to be incredibly well attended, but it has to be too. You know, it's something that we can't just feel it and not go. They need the numbers. All right. So interesting internationally to see a lot of people taking an interest in new hate speech legislation. Elon Musk amongst a number of high-profile people commenting on it. Donald Trump Jr., he's also taken aim at Ireland's proposed new hate speech legislation, labelling it insane. The eldest child of the former US president was responding to a tweet highlighting aspects of the legislation called the Criminal Justice Incitement to Violence or Hatred and Hate Offences Bill 2022. The updated legislation will add a demonstration test where prosecutors can rely on the use of hostile or prejudiced slurs, gestures or symbols at the time of offending in order to make it easier to secure prosecutions. The legislation is long awaited as Ireland does not currently have specific laws dealing with hate crime. The law will legislate for hate crimes by creating new aggravating forms of certain existing criminal offences where those offences are motivated by prejudice against a protected characteristic such as race, colour, nationality, religion, ethnic or national origin, sexual orientation, gender and disability. The aggravated offences will generally carry an enhanced penalty compared to the ordinary offence. Mr. Trump Jr., whose father visits Ireland for 2 days this week, writes, "It's insane. What happened in the free world?" He was responding to a tweet by an opponent of the legislation who described it as radical. The Twitter user wrote, "Ireland is about to pass one of the most radical hate speech bills yet. Merely possessing hateful material on your devices is enough to face prison time. Not only that, but the burden of proof is shifted to the accused, who's expected to prove they didn't intend to use the material to spread hate. This clause is so radical that even the Troicrist people, before profit, opposed it as a flagrant violation of civil liberties dark time." So effectively, presumably what that means, I don't know how it might be interpreted, but even unsolicited, if you were to receive a video on WhatsApp and you were found to be in possession of it and it was offensive, even though you said, "God, that's disgraceful. Who sent that to me?" That you would then have to prove that it wasn't your intention. I'm only giving an example as to, I could be reading it wrong. You would have to prove that you hadn't it in your possession to do bad with it. That's just one thing that jumps to my mind. Cathy Farrell is an advanced nurse practitioner, and we're talking about heart failure. Why is it important to discuss this? I mean, it's obvious, but are we in a particular part of an awareness cycle?
We are, actually, yes. So Heart Failure European Awareness is this week, Monday the 1st through to Sunday the 7th. And the Irish Association of Heart Failure Nurses and us, the Donegal Heart Failure team, are really trying to promote the signs and symptoms of heart failure, because most people think heart failure is cardiac arrest. Mm-hmm. They think it's death, whereas it's not. It's a chronic condition, a bit like diabetes, a bit like COPD. And we want people to be aware of the signs and symptoms so that if they do have them, they can go and get an earlier diagnosis.
All right. And is heart failure, can it affect you at any age? Is it something you're more likely to see in an older population? You know, that is not to say that no one will go through the signs. If you see them, take heed of them. But generally speaking...
Yeah. So I suppose heart failure, we know it is affects about 2% of the population, but that it rises to 10% of those over 70. So it's definitely a disease of older age in most people. But that being said, we have people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s with heart failure. It just is more common as we get older. And the reason for that really is that it's caused by other cardiac conditions. Mm-hmm. So if you have a heart attack, if you have high blood pressure, very often as we get older, these diseases are well managed or not, but people develop heart failure, and it is from our ageing population and the other cardiac diseases we're better at treating.
Yeah, and just in relation to blood pressure, I read some time ago, can't remember the exact statistics, but there's a lot of people walking around with blood pressure completely unaware, high blood pressure, sorry, completely unaware that they are.
There is. And I suppose there is a real focus these days for people to be aware of their blood pressure. And we have that campaign, Know Your Numbers, because high blood pressure is very often asymptomatic until people present with either a heart attack or a stroke or something else. Mm-hmm. Low blood pressure, people tend to have symptoms, they get dizzy with it. But high blood pressure, you're right, it can be the silent killer because people don't know it unless they get it checked.
And if you feel that you're generally in good health, say you're your 40s or 50s or 60s, you might not go very often to your GP, you know, because you feel, I feel great.
Yeah.
But you could be walking around with high blood pressure.
Absolutely. And it doesn't often have symptoms until it's nearly too late. Now, these days, you can find blood pressure monitors in the middle aisle of some supermarkets or anywhere else.
Did spot them not so long ago.
So, you know, I think that a lot of people do have home blood pressure monitors, and it's really important to know that if you have high blood pressure, so over 140, we would say that it should be treated.
Right. OK, so let's get to... this is what I wanted to say before we went on. Heart failure sounds
awful.
Okay. So what we want to encourage people is to come forward as we have this conversation and get attention if they notice any of the symptoms, because it sounds catastrophic.
Yeah.
But if it is spotted early, it is treatable. So talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I've been a heart failure nurse for 16 or 17 years now, and I still use that first line, the words heart failure would give you heart failure.
Yes,
you know, they
yes.
sound awful, and it's a diagnosis nobody wants to hear. But actually, it's important to understand that the heart's not going to stop. It's not working as effectively as it should be for different reasons. But very often the signs are people getting short of breath because you're not getting enough oxygen around the body, swollen ankles as you get fluid retention, swollen tummy, people feel tired. And all any one of them symptoms on their own could be any number of things. But the reality is, if you put them all together, it's kind of thinking, oh, well, maybe this is something else, particularly the swollen ankles, getting breathless lying down in bed, and then asking your GP to do a blood test can rule it out, or maybe guide towards maybe we need more investigations.
Yeah, and as you say, we have to be careful too, because there's a lot of crossover stuff there that people might self-diagnose. They might say, I'm short of breath, but I need to start doing some exercise. And, you know, I've got my feet up too long, and that's why I've got swollen. You know what I'm on about?
Absolutely.
Can see very quickly how someone might put it down to something else rather than going and getting that blood test you
and
talk
what
of.
What they often put it down to is getting older.
Yeah.
So just say, I don't have as much energy as I used to. I'm more breathless climbing hills. I fall asleep in the sofa when I sit down to watch the news. You know, all of those things that they might feel creeps up on them rather than being something acute, you know, and it is important just looking at all the full picture, all things together.
All right. And by the way, listeners, Cathy's going to be with us for another few minutes. If you have any questions, 086 60 25,000, you can WhatsApp or text them. So what are the very early signs? Because you've talked of, you know, shortness of breath, swollen ankles, swollen tummy, loss of appetite. You know, if they come together, you really need to, but as you say, the earlier you get it, the better. So is it just the early signs of those type of things we're just talking of there?
Well, sometimes we diagnose it earlier before people have any symptoms,
right,
based on the blood test. So particularly, you know, the HSC is running that chronic disease management program with GPs, and they're doing this blood test to proBNP for their diabetic patients, for their COPD patients. And very often we're picking things up that way that the GPs will then refer in. Because while it is a clinical diagnosis, so the examination might suggest you have heart failure, if you have signs of fluid retention, you actually need an echo, which is a cardiac ultrasound, along with the blood test to diagnose it. So we sometimes do find it in other situations before the symptoms. But the symptoms, as I said, are those of fluid retention. So the shortness of breath and swollen ankles.
All right. How do you treat it?
So it depends on the cause. So there's really, we divide heart failure into two sections, one where the pump function's reduced and one where the pump function is good, but it's stiff. So if it's reduced, we know that we have a lot of good new tablets that we didn't have 20 years ago, and they actually improve people's quality of life and length of life. We know that if you are diagnosed at 50 and you get on good disease management, medication, self-management, that we can prolong life by 7 years. If you're diagnosed at 50 or 70, I should say, that can add 5 years to your life. Mm-hmm. So it is about the medication, but also encouraging people to self-manage. So knowing the signs of fluid, contacting their healthcare provider if the need be, not ignoring symptoms, because the earlier we get it, the better.
So we talked about blood pressure. So controlling your blood pressure is obviously key to preventing it. Is there anything else, like general good health? Because I suppose if you're exercising and active, the lower blood pressure might follow with that type of a lifestyle. But is there anything else that is seen as preventative?
Well, it's all of the cardiac risk factors. So not smoking is important to prevent coronary artery disease, which is heart attacks, and that is one of the biggest causes of heart failure. You know, having damaged heart because of heart coronary artery disease. But regular exercise, not having too much alcohol. Alcohol is a toxin on the heart, and it can actually cause heart failure itself.
Talk to me about that, because, you know, I was having this conversation not so long ago. We all know smoking is, you know, you don't even, you couldn't even have a conversation about smoking being anything other than really, really damaging. But we've seen how different countries like Canada and elsewhere are starting to treat alcohol now as a carcinogenic, as a serious, that it can affect your organs and all that type of stuff. So how does alcohol affect your heart then?
So it's a depressant on the heart muscle. So it actually, where we're looking to improve the contraction and pump of the heart, alcohol makes it less effective at contracting. But it can also be a toxin, like chemotherapy can be a toxin, and it can attack the cells of the heart and weaken the heart muscle itself. So it is advised not to drink more than 1 to 2 drinks and keep within the moderate level.
So pardon my ignorance here, but the effect of alcohol in the heart, is it like anything that might slow your heart down, like beta blockers, or is it a completely different space altogether?
No. So beta blockers are actually protective of the heart by making it work more efficiently. So I just say that they work more smarter, not harder, you know, slow the heart rate down. Alcohol, actually, the actual pump of the heart, it makes it sluggish, you know, so it's not as an efficient contraction.
I hate thinking about what's inside me and you doing that with your hands. Do you know what I mean? I just want to know it works.
I know.
And it's working
okay. It works really well.
It's astonishing when you see what the heart does. Are there any particular foods we can eat to avoid this, asks a caller, or supplements for that matter?
There's not a lot of evidence for supplements specifically to prevent or help heart. There is a lot of the fish oils that are generally cardioprotective. Salt, avoiding salt is probably one of the big things in terms of low blood pressure, but also fluid retention if you have heart failure. It's avoiding excessive fluid or salt intake. We can't avoid it altogether.
What about family history?
Really important. Now, there's two types of family history when we're talking about heart failure. You have a family history of coronary artery disease, which is heart attacks or angina, but you also have a family history of inherited cardiomyopathies, which is one of the biggest cause of heart failure in younger
people. Now, what's cardiomyopathy?
Big word like jam. Mm-hmm. Big word like jam, right. I just say. Cardiomyopathy really means an enlarged heart muscle that's not pumping as well as it should be. And you can have no symptoms with it. We can often find that people have it by screening family members who have presented with heart failure.
And then that is that then, like, say for instance people's parents passed away, it might not be diagnosed. So in other words, the fact that you don't know necessarily that might have been a problem in your family doesn't mean that you should ignore it as a potential problem.
Absolutely, we would say a man, like, a sudden cardiac death is always suspicious. Someone who wasn't unwell or wasn't known to have heart problems and then just died. If they've had a post-mortem, then in more recent years we know that. But certainly in years gone by, we wouldn't necessarily know that. But we would say a man having a cardiac condition or a sudden cardiac death under 55 or a woman under 60 is relevant.
Low blood pressure and occasional swollen ankles.
So low blood pressure might be because of treatment for heart failure. So do you remember?
But this is a caller specifically. Oh, right. So I'll ask you just read it out. Okay. Is it possible to have heart failure if you have low blood pressure and if the person has occasionally swollen ankles?
It is possible. Yeah. So the problem is, I suppose, commenting on a particular one, someone might be on treatment for high blood pressure that now is pushed to too low, and some of the side effects of blood pressure tablets can cause swollen ankles. So it's important that it's evaluated properly.
So you go back into your GP, or you go into your GP and say, look, but it's very possible that person has been into the GP and the GP's assessed everything and is not too concerned, but they've heard us talking and, you know. How important is the mineral potassium in everyday living in a diet for a healthy heart, asks a caller?
So potassium is very important, like all other elements, but it's particularly important in heart health because a lot of the tablets for heart failure can raise the potassium. So we're often asking people to follow a low potassium diet. Potassium is one of those things that affect the cardiac cycle, and if it's too high it can cause rhythm problems, and if it's too low it can cause rhythm problems. So we do keep a good eye on potassium when we're treating heart failure.
This is kind of, we'll come back to heart failure, but just whilst we're talking about this and some other questions coming through, a lot of young people now drinking energy drinks, you know, Monster, Red Bull and all that type of stuff. As someone with an interest in the heart, does that concern you?
It does, because they're very high in caffeine. And caffeine, the effect on the heart is it causes the heart to race. And actually, a fast heart rate or tachycardia is one of the causes of heart failure in itself, with no other risk factors. So, yeah, we certainly, and we've
now, tachycardia, that might, if you're running or exercising heavily, it's not a dangerous thing as such. But if you are just...
It's completely okay when you're exercising, because that's the proper response of your body. But if you're sitting, doing nothing, and your heart rate is over 100, then that's working too hard. And as I said, the aim always is for the heart to work smarter, not harder. So we would try beta blockers, you mentioned, slow the heart rate down. That's one of the treatments of all cardiac conditions.
But obviously, you know, whatever about having a few cups of coffee, drinking two or three cans of this drink a day.
And I don't know enough about it to look at studies, but definitely we've seen case reports of people developing heart failure just from drinking. Now, I think the one I seen was 10 or 15 cans a day, but certainly...
To the extreme, of course, extreme, okay. Yeah. But then again, if you had something underlying, it could affect people in different ways as well. My 19-year-old daughter is always talking about Jaeger bombs. Are these as dangerous as they're made out to be for your heart? Now, it's called Jaeger bombs to make it sexy to buy over the bar, but it's just, I'm not saying it's just, but it's booze, like it's a vodka or a whiskey
alcohol
or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair play to them, by the way. Jaeger bombs at this time of the morning, I don't even like saying the word, let alone talking about it. Right, okay, so this is one of those issues that if you suspect it, you have to face up to your fears and go and get looked at, because there is treatment. Prevention obviously is key, but there is treatment. Is there are you going down to the Letterkenny Shopping Centre at some point?
We are today.
Yeah. Right, okay.
So we're going to just do an awareness stand, some blood pressure checks, just signs and symptoms, public awareness for a couple of hours in the shopping centre. So anybody who wants to come down and chat, that'd be great.
Okay. I get my blood pressure checked, but anyway.
Puts it up.
It really does. Where will you be located? It'd just be obvious when you go in.
I'm not quite sure.
Okay. I have a fair guess. Yeah. When people go in, they'll see. And I think it's actually a different type of environment for someone to get it checked if they haven't been to the GP for a while or something. And just you'll advise them if they...
And sometimes checking it when you're out and about where you don't expect to get it checked, because people do certainly feel anxious going to get to the doctor or going to their nurse.
Because they build themselves up for a day or two in some cases.
Goes up. Yeah.
Okay. Right. So anything else that you want us to be aware of, Cathy?
Well, I suppose just an awareness of our new service in Donegal. So the HSE Sláintecare Enhanced Community Care is what we work under now. And for the last 2 years, that has developed a heart failure service that has the diagnostics, so the echo, out in community settings. So we're not all based in the hospital anymore. So we go out to Dunloe Community Hospital, Buncrana, Carndonna, Donegal Town and Derrybeg. So it means that people... who are referred from the GP will be seen in their local clinics rather than having to travel to Letterkenny, which has made a big difference to them. Also, people who are admitted to hospital with heart failure, then majority have their follow-up in those local clinics too.
Yeah, which is great to be able to bring those services closer to people, isn't it? It's great. It's good for the people. It's good for the service as well that it's...
I've been working as a heart failure nurse, as I said, for 16 years, and everybody was coming to Letterkenny for their follow-up. And I don't think I realised that the time travel involved for them. We've looked at data, we've said 77 kilometres per patient per visit. And for a lot of older patients, they'll drive in their local community, can come themselves, but they wouldn't drive to Letterkenny. So it's making a big difference.
Okay, so just to remind you out there that if you have signs, shortness of breath, swollen ankles, swollen tummy, loss of appetite, don't just put it down to something else. Get it checked. Early detection is really important. And as you heard from Kathy there, and you heard from me too, the word heart failure can scare people. You know all about it because you've been saying these words every time. But many people go on to lead their lives with medication and treatment. So prevention is key. And get your blood pressure checked. And you can get your blood pressure checked down at the Letterkenny Shopping Centre later today. Kathy's a very friendly person and her team. So if you want to go and get that checked or just do it on the spur of the moment, it might be good. Then it could give you some indications about just your general heart health as well, your general health, not just about heart failure either, I presume.
Yes.
All right, Kathy, listen, it's been lovely having you in.
Thank you. Great.
And thanks. You've got a good bedside manner.
I've
well,
been told.
Well honed. And we appreciate your time. Thank you very much indeed. That Kathy Farrell, Advanced Nurse Practitioner, focusing on heart failure. Good morning to you again. Some comments coming in here, of course. Just inquiry. On the 27th of March, I received a cheque from Ulster Bank for €15,104 for monies owed due to having my account closed. I lodged this to my post office account, but it was returned, refer to drawer. Was wondering, did any of your listeners have the same problem? Okay, that's an interesting one. Why would it be returned? Anyone else have that problem? How did you get around it? Hi, Greg. Can any of your listeners help me? My child came to me and wants to talk to a therapist as they are not in a good place. Can anyone advise me of any good teenage professionals I can contact? Happy to pay for the service. Don't want to go on air. Of course you don't. And I understand that fully. Right. I'm sure there's people out there who will listen. I think it's brilliant that your child's able to speak to you and to recognise that they don't feel great. So that's really, really positive. So you should take great courage from that, comfort from that, sorry. But what would you suggest this listener do? Where can they go? They don't mind paying for it. Or is there easily accessible therapy available through the HSE or some arm of it? All right, let us know. Catherine's on the programme now. Hi, Catherine.
Hello, Greg.
Thanks for accepting our invite onto the show. Right, okay. This has come up before, I think. I'm not sure if it was about Letterkenny or not, but it is the magical mystery tour a tourist might have in terms of finding the tourist office. What have you noticed?
Okay, no, I was just sitting in traffic at the bottom of the street the other day, and you know the way when you live here, you don't notice things so much, but I was sitting at, you know, when you come down the Lower Main Street and the old Dumb Stores is across, and my eyes wandered around. I just happened to see the sign saying tourist office pointing up the one-way street, which is fine, tourists, as somebody pointed out to me, they might not be driving. But here's the thing about it, Greg, is, right, one, okay, so if a tourist is driving and they see that sign, well, they're just, what am I going to do? If a tourist is walking, it wouldn't be the quickest way to get to it. And the other thing, too, is, I mean, to bring us to the tourist office then, it's 25 minutes walk from there to the tourist office. If you're carrying a suitcase or a backpack or pushing a baby in a pram or, you know...
You would be forgiven for thinking, looking at the sign, that it's just around the corner.
Exactly, yeah, that it was just, you know, a short stroll up the street and here we have, which is what it should be, but it's not, of course.
Now, I'm sure the point's been made to you that in this day and age, everyone's on Google and all. But I think a tourist office still has a important role to play because a lot of people like to speak to a human person before they all get replaced by AI, of course.
The thing about it being online, that's all well and good. And yes, of course, many people are going to look online. But there's two things there. One, certain people don't really use the internet very much. And so it's no good to them. Another thing on that point is that the personal touch is so much better because, I mean, I've looked, I had a quick Google last night when Donna Marie was on to me, and the staff in the tourist office out there get A1 marks across the board in reviews, you know. So for them, for people to go in there and speak to people who seem to be very nice is much better than looking on the internet. And the other thing about looking on the internet, I did a quick search too, and I checked on official sites, and it says about Letterkenny, you can walk up and down the main street, it's a buzzing town, and visit Glenveagh. And then I clicked on things to do in Letterkenny, you can walk up and down the main street and visit Glenveagh. No mention of anything else. I mean, so that's the official, that's, if I was just looking on the internet, what I might see. Right. And the other thing then is, every single site you look on, they're going on about Schlieve League, Fanard Lighthouse, Mound Head, which are fantastic places. But Donegal is much more than the sum of three places, and I've stretched Donegal Castle included. And if I am booking a holiday to Ireland, I'm going to put maximum bang for my buck. And if I look up and I see Donegal only offers about three or four places, I won't bother about that. I'll go somewhere else. So the thing about having a real tourist office once we get people here is that those people are like ambassadors for the county, and they will guide people to what's best for them and all sorts of things like children, mm-hmm. accessibility, so on and so forth. But our tourist office is stuck away out at the Polestar roundabout. And if you come off the dual carriageway there, Greg, as I'm sure you are fully understand, and you turn left, come along the Blaney Road, cutting across there is kind of difficult.
Yeah, and as you quite rightly pointed out, because I was I couldn't figure out in my head, I was listening to you, Catherine, where the tourist office is. But you're quite right, it's out there at the, because I was there when it was officially opened, I should remember.
Yeah.
And yeah, that sign's pointing in the completely wrong direction as well.
I mean, they've made, I have to say, it's a nice building and I've been in it and it is nice and bright and light. And it's, they've made a nice location out of which, what is kind of a scummy enough spot. I mean, you're on road junctions and cars and traffic and everything. So it looks like it's too far away. And as somebody...
There is talk about it going up to the courthouse, though, isn't there? I thought some people... was that maybe just brought up at a council meeting?
No, but the thing, that's what everybody... When I said about... When I put that photograph onto Facebook, that's what people were saying about the courthouse. And I mean, that courthouse is lying there and it's in the centre of the town. Mm. And didn't we spend £1 million flipping pounds to preserve the front wall? Crazy, I know, but they, you know, they could utilise it now.
Okay. Right, listen, and another I think anything... go ahead, briefly, if you don't mind, Catherine, thank you.
Another option, too, was have a little sub-office down at the 100%. Bus station, which is a brilliant idea. Yep. A wee porter cabin cost nothing. Mm-hmm. Put it in there, you know. But, I mean, that's all just sticking band-aids on a massive cut. They should be working on shutting the tourist office out there altogether and putting it in a proper location that's easily accessible to people. You know, even if they built a new one there on the Pierce Road on all that waste ground, or you know what I mean? If there was something that people could both walk and drive to.
Yeah. All right, Catherine, listen, we'll see what others think. I think many people will agree with you. You have to maximise it, don't you? There's no point us complaining about if we're not doing our best to maximise the potential of tourism and all the money that brings. All right, Catherine, lovely to chat to you. Thank you very much indeed. I appreciate
too, Greg.
It.
Bye
all right,
now.
Okay,
bye,
take
bye,
care. Do you agree? Disagree? 0860 25000. WhatsApps and texts to that number.